Chapter 79. A gentleman, to dance, you should have seen how Jemmy stared, and our girl blushed, when the damsel Fanny, coming forward, stood on the tips of only 5 of her toes, and raising up the other 5, and the foot belonging to them, almost to her shoulder, twirled round, and round, and round, like a teetotum, for a couple of minutes or more. And as she settled down, at last, on both feet, in a natural decent posture, you should have heard how the house roared with applause, the boxes clapping with all their might, and waving their handkerchiefs, the pit shouting, "Bravo!" Some people, who, I suppose, were rather angry at such an exhibition, threw bunches of flowers at her, and what do you think she did? Why, hang me, if she did not come forward, as though nothing had happened, gather up the things they had thrown at her, smile, press them to her heart, and begin whirling round again faster than ever. Talk about coolness, I never saw such in all my born days. "Nasty thing," says Jemmy, starting up in a fury, "if women will act so, it serves them right to be treated so." "Oh, yes, she acts beautifully," says our friend His Excellency, who along with Baron von Punter and Tagrag, used very seldom to miss coming to our box. "She may act very beautifully, Monsieur, but she don't dress so, and I am very glad they threw that orange peel, and all those things at her, and that the people waved to her to get off." Here His Excellency, and the Baron and Tag, set up a roar of laughter. "My dear Mrs. Cox," says Tag, "those are the most famous dancers in the world, and we throw myrtle, geraniums, and lilies and roses at them, in token of our immense admiration." "Well, I never," said my wife, and poor Jim Imran slunk behind the curtain, and looked as red as it almost, after the one had done the next begun. But when, all of a sudden, a somebody came skipping and bounding in, like an Indian rubber ball, flinging itself up, at least 6 feet from the stage, and there shaking about its legs like mad, we were more astonished than ever. "That's Anatole," says one of the gentlemen. "Anna who?" says my wife, and she might well be mistaken. For this person had a hat and feathers, a bare neck and arms, great black ringlets, and a little calico frock, which came down to the knees. "Anatole. You would not think he was 63 years old, he's as active as a man of 20. "He!" shrieked out my wife. "What, is that there a man? For shame, Monsieur. Jim Imran, dear, get your cloak, and come along, and I'll thank you, my dear, to call our people, and let us go home." You wouldn't think, after this, that my Jemmy, who had shown such a horror at the bally, as they call it, should ever grow accustomed to it. But she liked to hear her name shouted out in the crush room, and so would stop till the end of everything. And, law bless you, in 3 weeks from that time, she could look at the ballet as she would at a dancing dog in the streets, and would bring her double-barreled opera glass up to her eyes as coolly as if she had been a born duchess. As for me, I did at Rome as Rome does, and precious fun it used to be, sometimes. My friend the Baron insisted one night on my going behind the scenes, where, being a subscriber, he said I had what they call my entree. Behind, then, I went, and such a place you never saw nor heard of. Fancy lots of young and old gents of the fashion crowding round and staring at the actresses practicing their steps. Fancy yellow snuffy foreigners, chattering always, and smelling fearfully of tobacco. Fancy scores of Jews, with hooked noses and black muzzles, covered with rings, chains, sham diamonds, and gold waistcoats. Fancy old men dressed in old nightgowns, with knock-knees, and dirty flesh-colored cotton stockings, and dabs of brick dust on their wrinkled old chops, and tow wigs, such wigs. For the bald ones, and great tin spears in their hands mayhap, or else shepherd's crooks, and fusty garlands of flowers made of red and green bays. Fancy troops of girls giggling, chattering, pushing to and fro, amidst old black canvas, gothic halls, thrones, pasteboard cupids, dragons, and such like. Such dirt, darkness, crowd, confusion and gabble of all conceivable languages was never known. If you could but have seen Monsieur Anatole. Instead of looking 20, he looked 1,000. The old man's wig was off, and the barber was giving it a touch with the tongs. Monsieur was taking snuff himself, and a boy was standing by with a pint of beer from the public house at the corner of Charles Street. I met with a little accident during the 3/4 of an hour which they allow for the entertainment of us men of fashion on the stage, before the curtain draws up for the ballet, while the ladies in the boxes are gaping, and the people in the pit are drumming with their feet, and canes in the rudest manner possible, as though they couldn't wait. Just at the moment before the little bell rings and the curtain flies up, and we scuffle off to the sides, for we always stay till the very last moment, I was in the middle of the stage, making myself very affable to the fair figurantes which was spinning and twirling about me, and asking them, if they wasn't cold, and such like politeness, in the most condescending way possible, when the bolt was suddenly withdrawn, and down I popped, through a trap in the stage, into the place below. Luckily I was stopped by a piece of machinery, consisting of a heap of green blankets, and a young lady coming up as Venus rising from the sea. If I had not fallen so soft, I don't know what might have been the consequence of the collusion. I never told Mrs. Cox, for she can't bear to hear of my paying the least attention to the fair sex. Striking a balance. Next door to us, in Portland Place, lived the Right Honorable the Earl of Kilblazes, of Colmacracy Castle, County Kildare, and his mother the Dowager Countess. Lady Kilblazes had a daughter, Lady Juliana Matilda McTurk, of the exact age of our dear Jim Imran, and a son, the Honorable Arthur Wellington Anglesea Bletcher Bulow McTurk, only 10 months older than our boy Tug. My darling Jemmy is a woman of spirit, and, as become her station, made every possible attempt to become acquainted with the Dowager Countess of Kilblazes, which her ladyship because, forsooth, she was the daughter of the minister, and Prince of Wales' great friend, the Earl of Portanchery, thought fit to reject. I don't wonder at my Jemmy growing so angry with her, and determining, in every way, to put her ladyship down. The Kilblazes estate is not so large as the Tuggeridge property by 2,000 a year at least, and so my wife, when our neighbors kept only 2 footmen, was quite authorized in having 3, and she made it a point, as soon as ever the Kilblazes carriage and pair came round, to have out her own carriage and 4. Well, our box was next to theirs at the opera, only twice as big. Whatever masters went to Lady Juliana, came to my Jim Imran, and what do you think Jemmy did? She got her celebrated governess, Madame de Flickflack, away from the Countess, by offering a double salary. It was quite a treasure, they said, to have Madame Flickflack. As he had been to support her father, the Count, when he emigrated, a French dancer at the Italian opera. French dancing, and Italian, therefore, we had at once, and in the best style. It is astonishing how quick and well she used to speak the French especially. Master Arthur McTurk was at the famous school of the Reverend Clement Coddler, along with 110 other young fashionables, from the age of 3 to 15, and to this establishment Jemmy sent our Tug, adding 40 guineas to the 120 paid every year for the boarders. I think I found out the dear soul's reason. For, one day, speaking about the school to a mutual acquaintance of ours and the Kilblazes, she whispered to him that he never would have thought of sending her darling boy at the rate which her next-door neighbors paid. Their lad, she was sure, must be starved. However, poor people, they did the best they could on their income. Coddler's, in fact, was the tip-top school near London. He had been tutor to the Duke of Buckminster, who had set him up in the school, and, as I tell you, all the peerage and respectable commoners came to it. You read in the bill, the synopsis, I think, Coddler called it, after the account of the charges for board, masters, extras, and see very young nobleman or gentleman is expected to bring a knife, fork, spoon, and goblet of silver to prevent breakage, which will not be returned. A dressing gown and slippers, toilet box, pomatum, curling irons, and C&C. The pupil must on no account be allowed to have more than 10 guineas of pocket money, unless his parents particularly desire it, or he be above 15 years of age. Wine will be an extra charge, as are warm, vapor, and douche baths. Carriage exercise will be provided at the rate of 15 guineas per quarter. It is earnestly requested that no young nobleman or gentleman be allowed to smoke. In a place devoted to the cultivation of polite literature, such an ignoble enjoyment were profane. Clement Coddler, M.A., chaplain and late tutor to His Grace the Duke of Buckminster. Mount Parnassus, Richmond, Surrey. To this establishment our tug was sent. "Ecollect, my dear," said his mama, "that you are a tuggerich by birth, and that I expect you to beat all the boys in the school, especially that Wellington McTurk, who, though he is a lord's son, is nothing to you, who are the heir of Tuggerichville." Tug was a smart young fellow enough, and could cut and curl as well as any young chap of his age. He was not a bad hand at a wig either, and could shave too, very prettily. But that was in the old time, when we were not great people. When he came to be a gentleman, he had to learn Latin and Greek, and had a deal of lost time to make up for, on going to school. However, we had no fear, for the Reverend Mr. Coddler used to send monthly accounts of his pupil's progress, and if Tug was not a wonder of the world, I don't know who was. It was general behavior excellent. English very good. French tres bien. Latin optum. And so on. He possessed all the virtues, and wrote to us every month for money. My dear Jemmy and I determined to go and see him, after he had been at school a quarter. We went, and were shown by Mr. Coddler, one of the meekest, smilingest little men I ever saw, into the bedrooms and eating rooms, the dromedaries and refractories he called them, which were all as comfortable might be. "Tea is a holiday, today," said Mr. Coddler, and a holiday it seemed to be. In the dining room were half a dozen young gentlemen playing at cards, LL tip-top nobility, observed Mr. Coddler. In the bedrooms there was only one gent. He was lying on his bed, reading novels and smoking cigars. "Straordinary genius," whispered Coddler. "Honorable Tom Fitzwater, cousin of Lord Byron's, smokes all day, and has written the sweetest poems you can imagine." "Genius, my dear madam, you know genius must have its way." "L, upon my word," says Jemmy, "if that's genius, I had rather that Master Tuggerich Cox Tuggerich remained a dull fellow." "Impossible, my dear madam," said Coddler. "Mr. Tuggerich Cox couldn't be stupid if he tried." Just then up comes Lord Claude Lollipop, third son of the Marquis of Alicumpen. We were introduced instantly, colon Lord Claude Lollipop, Mr. and Mrs. Cox. The little lord wagged his head, my wife bowed very low, and so did Mr. Coddler, who, as he saw my lord making for the playground, begged him to show us the way. "Ome along," says my lord, and as he walked before us, whistling, we had leisure to remark the beautiful holes in his jacket, and elsewhere. About 20 young noblemen and gentlemen were gathered round a pastry cook's shop at the end of the green. "That's the grub shop," said my lord, "where we young gentlemen what has money buys our whittles, and them young gentlemen what has none, goes tick." Then we passed a poor red-haired usher sitting on a bench alone. "That's Mr. Hicks, the usher, ma'am," says my lord. "E keep him, for he's very useful to throw stones at, and he keeps the chaps' coats when there's a fight, or a game at cricket. Well, Hicks, how's your mother? What's the row now?" "Believe, my lord," said the usher, very meekly, "there is a pugilistic encounter somewhere on the premises the Honorable Mr. Mac." "Oh, come along," said Lord Lollipop, "come along. This way, ma'am. Go it, ye cripples." And my lord pulled my dear Jemmy's gown in the kindest and most familiar way, she trotting on after him, mightily pleased to be so taken notice of, and I after her. A little boy went running across the green. Who is it, Petitos? Screams my lord. Erkan the barber, pipes Petitos, and runs to the pastry cooks like mad. Erkan the ba laughs out my lord, looking at us. This way, ma'am. And turning round a corner, he opened a door into a courtyard, where a number of boys were collected, and a great noise of shrill voices might be heard. Oit, Turk, says one. Oit, barber, says another. Punch his life out, roars another, whose voice was just cracked, and his clothes half a yard too short for him. Fancy our horror when, on the crowd making way, we saw Tug pummeling away at the Honorable Master McTurk. My dear Jemmy, who don't understand such things, pounced upon the two at once, and, with one hand tearing away Tug, sent him spinning back into the arms of his seconds, while, with the other, she clawed hold of Master McTurk's red hair, and, as soon as she got her second hand free, banged it about his face and ears like a good one. You nasty, wicked, quarrelsome aristocratic, each word was a bang, aristocratic, oh, oh, oh. Here the word stopped, for what with the agitation, maternal solicitude, and a dreadful kick on the shins which, I am ashamed to say, Master McTurk administered, my dear Jemmy could bear it no longer, and sunk fainting away in my arms. Down at Bula. Although there was a regular cut between the next door people and us, yet Tug and the Honorable Master McTurk kept up their acquaintance over the back garden wall, and in the stables, where they were fighting, making friends, and playing tricks from morning to night, during the holidays. Indeed, it was from young Mac that we first heard of Madame de Flickflack, of whom my Jemmy robbed Lady Kilblazes, as I before have related. When our friend the Baron first saw Madame, a very tender greeting passed between them, for they had, as it appeared, been old friends abroad. Apristi, said the Baron, in his lingo, K-face too icy, amenade? T-toy, mon pauvre chicket, says she, S-C-Q and Thomas Ailery trait? Il parrot K-2-ness plus General Shea Franco, chut, says the Baron, putting his finger to his lips. What are they saying, my dear? Says my wife to Jim Imran, who had a pretty knowledge of the language by this time. I don't know what sapristi means, mama, but the Baron asked Madam what she was doing here. And Madam said, anew, chicket, you are no more a general at Franco. ... Have I not translated rightly, Madam? Awe, mon chou, mon ange. Yes, my angel, my cabbage. Quite right. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.